This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. In 2010, the Alaska Native Corporation, MTNT Management Services, began work for the U.S. military, supplying power to U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. The contract is worth about $50 million for the company, and the work is being administered in western Wisconsin. Reinhard Mueller of Sparta is MTNT's chief operating officer. He talked with WPR's Mary Meehan Strube about the work that's being done in Afghanistan.
The leads that we received, you know, starting in the late winter of 2009, was that there was an acquisition that the Corps of Engineers was having trouble with, at least on paper. You know, you don't know the full story, but from the federal publications where they advertise daily, the website's called FedBizOps. It long ago was called Commerce Business Daily. It was issued daily like a little phone book. It gave everything from tuna spotters to shipbuilders to military requirements that the government was buying on a daily basis, which is now, done online like everything. And the things that were published under this particular requirement seemed to point to something that they were having a problem with. So we decided to start calling on that district and letting them know that, we have the ability to provide solutions. I would think, on our first or second meeting, they thought that, the problem is this big and you guys are that small and how can you help and we don't get it. And so we had a lot to overcome. But over a period of about 8 months, and I think the light went on for them. And in the meantime, their problem became much more serious because in the late part of 09, early part of 10, they still had a contract in place with a contractor that was performing very well. And this is in the area of prime power, providing everything from power generation, power distribution, down to the last receptacle. The situation got crucial apparently midsummer, unbeknownst to us, because the contract, was as extended as it could become legally between the government and the subcontractor. And they no longer had the ability to issue work, however silly that may seem, that, you're running a war and you got no way to bring power to certain things. And, the war zone is in some instances, stable in that bases exist and, these pieces of distribution have been put in place and that's rather static. But other parts of the effort are very dynamic in that you're always establishing new forward operating points. New buildings need to be constructed to house new aircraft, whatever the case may be. In August, we were able to take on what had been quite a pipeline of work, an unmet need. To be able to get power to a lot of facilities through the award of a contract to our firm. And we continue to fulfill that need. And it's, at the pace at which the work has been awarded to us and also been completed is really quite stunning.
How long do you have to complete this contract?
The umbrella contract is good for 1 year, at least the first four segments were. And now we're out for another year because we just received another IDIQ. And then the individual parcels typically have 90 to 120 days to complete the, whatever the individual pieces of work are.
These are not small dollars. And so the contract now that you're working with to bring the power throughout Afghanistan, what kind of dollars are we talking with that contract?
The work in Afghanistan has ranged from is small. I don't know if I saw a $5,000 one, but there's been a $9,000 and a couple of $10,000 ones, up to $2.1 million. The $2.1 million contract was for a power plant, a 1 megawatt power plant from the generation to the electrical gear. And some of the smaller ones are to energize some very succinct little devices, whether a lift station or barbershop, whatever the case may be. And, there are a lot of $150,000, $160,000 delivery orders that we have. Delivery order and contract are interchangeable. Delivery order is the parcel of work delivered under the umbrella contract.
So when you put that all together, we're in the millions of dollars again then?
Oh, yes. The potential value of the contracts we have is $50 million at this time.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Mary Meehan Stroob, and my guest today is Reinhard Mueller, Chief Operations Officer with MTNT Management Services, an Alaskan Native-owned corporation cooperating with the federal government to bring power to Afghanistan. When I first heard about you as well as MTNT, and I'm thinking, wow, people in this area don't recognize that we have individuals and companies that are working and receiving federal dollars to accomplish federal contracts, not necessarily in our area, but working in our area to see that this happens elsewhere. You have a small office, right?
Yeah, we occupy an office on Main Street in Sparta, Wisconsin.
But you carry out this $50 million contract.
It sounds pretty impressive when you mention it the way you do. This has been a buildup for me, you know, one bite at a time.
Sure.
And I still see it as, many crumbs laid end to end, which at some point comprise a cake. But that cake being the $50 million potential sum that this will come to. You know, I feel very fortunate to be able to take this on. I mean, this is more than many things I've taken on, a very direct fruit of my own intuition, my effort with other team members to accomplish it, and now also being able to execute it. You know, we have individuals that, you know, are in Afghanistan every day. You know, we have our team there. We have hired people here locally to act as administrators. I obviously benefit as well. We bring, a share of those federal dollars back to Western Wisconsin. It is quite interesting, but what's really been awakening for me in my three trips to Afghanistan and my stops along the way is the level of globalization of commerce and enterprise across the world that I don't think people in the United States in general have any idea what's going on. And, you know, to some degree, that's unfortunate because, my parents are immigrants. And when they came to this country in the 50s, you know, the saying that only in America was quite prevalent. And now it's not so much. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, that's not right. Whether you're, you know, in a group of individuals, a company, a country, I think we all recognize the value of struggle. And that if you really want something, you know, it's like the little mouse that couldn't. And MTNT is kind of like the little mouse that couldn't. And there are people in our community in Anchorage that are just like, what are they doing over there, you know? Well, we're doing just fine. We're doing really well, actually. And that's, you know, financially we're doing fine. But, I mean, the fact that we're pulling this off and got people to go over there, haven't got anybody hurt, are making inroads in other business areas, you know, I'm very proud of that. And it's because it's like the little mouse that could.
I would expect that you're facing many different issues in a third world war zone like Afghanistan that maybe you hadn't even anticipated or thought about.
When we were first awarded the contract, my number one objective was to mobilize our forces and get ourselves established there. And we had help from our partners who, you know, were established there. The electrical contractor that has been operating there is now our subcontractor. But to get our management team over there, you know, there's things that I've never been involved with before. I mean, wiring large sums of money to a guy whose name you can't pronounce. I mean, that's a big deal, you know, especially when it's $30,000, you know, and then taking somebody's word for the shipping is now not $7,000, but $16,000 to get that truck over there. Okay, I believe you. Yeah, you know, there's all these things venturing outside your comfort zone financially. And then, of course, once you're over there, it becomes your own skin and bones that you're kind of worried about and for others. The situation within Bagram is in some ways spooky, in some ways very isolated. There's a wall around the whole place that is so high you can't see out of it, but it doesn't prevent the bad guys from throwing things over the wall that explode. But it's kind of like throwing something into a town the size of Toma or Sparta. I mean, you're probably not going to hit – somebody you know. Mm-hmm. It's a big place. It doesn't happen every day, but it can happen. So these things are on your mind, and there's something. Those are things you can't really protect against. And once you're over that, you know, other concerns persist, and then you want to venture outside the wall, see what it looks like on the other side. And, you know, all these exploratory feelings. And to be more succinct, you know, we've been there three times. The first time I never left Bagram. You know, you hear a pop of machine gun fire at night, and it's a big deal. You know, you wake up and you think, oh, my God, what's going on? And then that becomes the new normal. The second trip, we hired a security group and left Bagram and traveled outside. And, you know, I saw poverty like I've never seen or imagined in my life. You know, children filling potholes in hopes of a drink of water type of thing. It's just and the daily living conditions, and I mean, it's unbelievable. To being in Kabul and seeing what a third world urban scene is like, to living in a compound, those were all very new and interesting experiences. But also, it was very evident that with all this, you know, fear and different living conditions, also comes an incredible amount of opportunity, and for those that want to venture into it, and you know that has a certain amount of excitement with it as well. Particularly, you know, when you struggle so much on a daily basis in what hasn't been a particularly good economy in this country, and also in a situation where so many federal dollars, you know, for a company that works in the federal sector and is finding a more difficult time because of all the dollars moving to the Middle East, you know, you kind of open the door of the airplane when you get there and says, oh, this is where it all went, you know, because that's exactly the feeling you have.
Does the war complicate the work that's happening over there?
Oh, very much so. First of all our work is done what we call behind the wire, meaning it's inside U.S. secured facilities, or maybe even a little broader in ISAF secured facilities, meaning in a broader term, NATO. That's generally means American, but there are places that are NATO branded. So if it's on Bagram or on Kandahar, for example, those are very large bases and are easily accessed through, you know, a whole variety of contractors that have set up charter flights to and from the bases from places like Dubai. So getting men and materials in and out of those places is possible on a for-fee basis, or if you want to wait for military air, if you are a contractor in theater, you are authorized the military flights. But that comes with an associated waiting time and bump schedule and, you know, all the other encumbrances. So that's fairly reasonable. But now when you look at the hundreds of forward operating bases and other smaller outposts and mid-sized bases to get to, driving to them is really out of the question for personnel because of the security costs are so enormous. And the American military is there, not there to protect contractors. They're there to fight a war. So if you would want to choose to drive from point X to point Y, you would most likely choose to have a private security escort, which it gets to be unreasonable for the, you know, amount of travel you would have to do that way. So again, it's air travel, helicopter travel, and it gets to be very difficult moving men and materials. Now, there's, you know, a whole other category of work that's outside the wire, and whether that's done by Afghanis, whether that's done by groups that are trying to support the rebuilding of Afghanistan through humanitarian paths or other lines, you know, they come sometimes with security provided by private contractors under contract a variety of ways. But the risk factor starts growing fairly largely because, again, it's a, you know, it's a religious war. It's a tribal ethnic thing. The bad guys embed themselves pretty easily in the greater population. And even inside the Afghan National Army or police, you know, they sign up, they get in, they blend in, and then they blow themselves up. And so even for instance, our group working inside Afghan National Army or Afghan National Police bases, which are kind of the flavor of the day, because that is being built up in a tremendous fashion right now, and there's a lot of work opportunity there. It's not a sure deal. You don't know. I mean, you don't know who you're working with. You just don't.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Mary Meehan Strube, and my guest today is Reinhard Mueller, Chief Operations Officer with MTNT Management Services. And we're talking about the work he does with the federal government in bringing energy and power to Afghanistan. Reinhard, you talked about some of the challenges or complications that you have there. I know Afghanistan is a mountainous country. Does the terrain present some issues with the work you're trying to do there?
The terrain does, in largely just in logistics. I mentioned earlier that men and materials are largely flown from place to place. Well, there are many things that are difficult to fly, particularly on smaller aircraft, and that would be some of the larger generators. And those go on the back of some pretty old Afghani trucks that are also affectionately called jingle trucks, because you've probably seen it on television where they've dolled these things up, painted them up, and put all kinds of chains on them. But to the north, going from Bagram and Kabul are fairly in the north. They're in a basin that's elevated much like Denver, about a mile high, and are surrounded by mountains that are probably 14,000-foot mountains. So it's much like the Front Range there by Denver, but it's, again, all ringed with mountains. So the passes get to be very challenging in every direction. Now, down towards Kandahar, up to the southwest of Kandahar, it's a desert plain. There's not much going on there, but there also are not any roads. There's just, it's a desert. Roads and overland movement of things are just generally challenging because of the condition of the infrastructure and years of war. When we were there last, we had taken a trip to Mazar Sharif to investigate what was touted to us to be a completely different kind of place, and it was. Mazar Sharif is not facing near the struggles other parts of the country are. The ethnic groups that are sympathetic to the Taliban are either not there or are in very small numbers. And the area has a very progressive feel to it. There's construction going on, modern buildings. Although it's certainly still a third world place, there are signs of that are much different than you see in other places. Railroad has just been built from the Uzbekistan border, and we traversed it up and down. In fact, took part in the final test run by the constructors of the train before it was being delivered to the owners. It terminates right outside a large NATO base in Mazar Sharif, so it is destined to become quite a logistics hub. So there are being inroads made into the logistics and terrain challenges there, the railroad being just the latest. But again, the railroad stops where it stops because of a mountain.
Reinhard, in Iraq we hear stories of very sporadic energy supply. Is that the case in Afghanistan? Or how are those situations different?
From a civilian standpoint, my view of the situation is that Iraq was a more advanced culture before the war, and there was some expectation of electrical and other public amenities offered to the populace. That hasn't been the case in Afghanistan for many years. So the expectation is entirely different in Afghanistan, where there are public grids in Kabul and places like it. In general, I don't believe that a power grid exists outside of major metropolitan areas. I did view a power plant that was constructed outside of Kabul. It was not in operation for some political reason. It was built by U.S. tax dollars, I believe, to a large degree. But fueled by diesel fuel and for whatever reason has not been put into operation. I been told is because of the cost of diesel fuel. I find that hard to believe, considering the cost of the plant and the need for the power. But maybe more likely due to the difficulty of getting fuel across the border and higher needs coming ahead of that that power plant.
We've heard about a lot of fraud and abuse of privatized government contracts associated with the wars in the Middle East. What assurances do you give people that they're getting the services that you contracted to do?
The opportunism or graft or corruption that you described is something that you observe and hear about in many different forms and layers when you're there. As far as our operation is concerned, you know, and our supply chain and how we control that, I personally feel very very good about it all, in that we deliver what we say we're going to deliver for the price that we said we were going to deliver, because we control the entire material chain and workforce chain. It comes at an expense, though. All of our workers are U.S. workers. They're not just guys off the street or gals off the street. They are experienced journeyman electricians that have proven experience and have been significantly vetted and gone through a school and significant drug screening and other things of the like. So you're getting a very high quality, skilled trades worker in country, and they're paid very well as well. The United States is not the only one that's invented electricity, and there are a lot of other people that employ its use. And we probably like to think that between us and the Europeans, that we do a pretty good job of developing that system and keeping it safe and incorporating the latest safety ideas into what makes an electrical system safe. And so therefore the UL stamp parts probably bear the latest innovations, and we'd like to believe that only UL parts can be used. And that's what happens through that maintenance of the supply chain. But as you can imagine, that comes at a price. I mean, if you could buy these things from Pakistan, it'd be cheaper.
Reinhard Mueller of Sparta is Chief Operating Officer of MTNT Management. He shared stories of being a private contractor in a war zone with WPR's Mary Meehan Stroob. Coming up in the next half hour, the new book, Hinterland Dreams, takes a look at the founding of La Crosse in the 19th century and shows that government played a key role in the development of the Mississippi River City. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse.